We're talking about mental health in the context of performance as a person, whether I be a, let's call it a CEO, whether I be a leader, if that's what one uses, a manager, or just generally in life from that perspective. So you're Anna Loback?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. So, okay, let's start off with, what's your qualifications?
I'm a psychologist, I'm a business psychologist and an executive coach. I'm also the MD of a leadership development consultancy, Turning Point Leadership, in the UK.
So what does it mean to be a business psychologist?
It means that we apply science, in particular psychology, concepts and tools from neuroscience, etc., into the workplace to help leaders perform better, people in general perform better, and to help organizations create conditions for optimal performance.
Fantastic. So, some of the people you work with, just to give us context.
I have the pleasure of working with some of the largest organizations in the world. I work with...
Such as?
The largest beauty company in the world, L'Oreal. I've coached, in fact, hundreds of their senior managers, and I work with a lot of senior leadership teams from that company. Other organizations like LVMH, for instance,
which is
the largest luxury goods company in the world.
They
own Louis Vuitton, Moët Hennessy. They own Christian Dior, Fendi, Givenchy, etc., etc. I work with a lot of financial companies as well, the largest bank in the world, BNPP. I also work with the UN, so it's quite varied in terms of sectors and industries, but it's a real kind of pleasure really to get to work with these big organizations.
Mm. All right, so it's like, well, I'm impressed. So we're talking about mental health, but in the context of performance, you know, being able to do my job, accomplish, achieve. So help me. So, you know, what happens when I just feel, so I'm so busy, I just feel like I can't switch off? What's going on?
Mm-hmm. If you feel like you can't switch off, you're probably experiencing what I would call a hyper-connected brain. You're just really just constantly connected to everything. We're surrounded by so many different stimuli around us and so many external triggers pulling us. And really when you lose the ability to switch off, to disconnect from those things and to connect to the things that are actually fundamental and essential for your brain and therefore essential elements of mental health, when you're not able to disconnect from those things to connect to the real things that really matter, that's what you experience. That feeling that you can't switch off is actually not just because you're not switching off, but it's because you're not switching on to the important things for your mental health.
Okay, so that's all right. So asking some questions. All right. So if I would think back without sounding like I'm old, right? But there was a day when... Okay, productivity might not be what it was then or whatever, where you didn't carry a phone around that is constant. You are constantly connected and available for people to connect with you.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have that, but then I've noticed, I'm just going to some of my observations to that.
Yeah.
So now I've noticed a little bit of a trend of people have got phones, but it's almost intrusive to call them on a phone. You didn't have, you know, once if you were to write a letter, you weren't expecting an instant reply, but we got email.
Yeah.
I don't think you would have written a letter in a business context that was a conversation.
Yeah.
How is this all part of what you mean by interconnected? We just see everything seems to be so in the moment now that we're completely connected all the time. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. That and not just the things that you mentioned, but even other things like because it's interesting you mentioned a lot of things that relate to work, but the problem is that these constant things that keep us constantly switched on are not just related to the way we work, they're also related to the way we play as well.
So we're connected to a whole lot of things. Let's just, for a moment, let's just go. So it's work, so every pleasure, we're connected to it constantly. You made a key statement just that I picked up when you started. You said, which is stopping us from being connected to the right things.
So what's really interesting about the way our brain works is that, and I've talked about this with you before in other situations, when I explain what happens in your nervous system, for instance, when you have the sympathetic nervous system, right, the fight or flight, and the parasympathetic nervous system, the rest and digest. Now, what's the reason why I'm bringing this into the answer to your question, Gary, is because what's really fantastic about this particular piece of research that I'm thinking about, and there's some really fascinating neuroscience research showing what happens in our brains when they are in this rest mode. And what's fascinating about what's happening there is that the type of neural activity and the type of brain activity that happens in the rest and digest type of functioning is exactly identical to the type of brain activity that relates to social connection. What this means is that even when your brain is resting, the autopilot that relates to resting is actually identical in terms of the processes to what happens when you're socially connected with someone. And that's also why when people sleep and they dream, usually the dreams can be about other people. In fact, if you really think about the way you stop and think about things, when you pause to reflect and to try to restore balance to your nervous system and reactivate your rest and digest type of functioning, it's very likely that you will end up somehow thinking about other people. Other people's minds, other people's thoughts. We call this metacognition. It's essentially what distinguishes us from, you know, from other animals. The fact that we can not only think about how we think, but we can think about how other people think. And this is fascinating. The fact that your brain, when it's resting, it's doing that.
Why we get so consumed with what are they thinking about me? What do people think about me?
That
how
as
do
well.
People see me?
Absolutely.
Wow.
That as
wow.
well. And you know, the whole social aspect of the brain is so crucial to even to the brain's physiology, even to the size of your brain. If you think about the size of our brains, the human brain is actually much larger in comparison to the other organs when you think about the human body. So this aspect of the social brain is so key for us to understand how we work.
So the whole interconnectedness.
Exactly.
With
exactly.
other people and.
Exactly.
Because it's amazing. So my mind is just. There's all sorts of ways I could ask them that. So the whole. So you sit there and you think the world we currently live in right now is incredibly. I would go, it's not my own. I can't remember where I read the statement where self-interest is just seems to be the issue for people. Yet we forget that we're actually the who we are. We're actually a social being by nature.
Yeah.
And our everything from the word collective self-interest to how we connect with other people is so important to us.
Yeah.
Yet it seems to be so underplayed in its importance.
Absolutely, massively. And what's interesting also about the current context that we live in is, and if we go back to the concept of hyper-connected brain and the impact of that in terms of mental health, is that some people might be watching this and thinking, well, actually, you would think that an increased connection with others or with other things would be therefore good for us because social connection is so important for us. But actually what this type of connection is doing is not good for us at all. And I'll explain why. So when you have the hyper-connectivity and you started this conversation by asking me the question, you know, why can't I switch off?
Yeah.
And why is this making me feel like that? yes, we are social beings, and yes, our brain really has been wired for social connection, but at the same time, it also needs rest and balance when it comes to that social connection. We're not supposed to be constantly connected to others or to external stimuli. So we need connection just as much as we need rest.
Would you term it? So if I was going to say, so what's real social connection?
So real social connection is not the type of connection that you get from social media or from gadgets or from text messages or from that sort of stuff. Now, the problem with that is that people are being conditioned because of these types of connection that I've just mentioned. People are being conditioned to a type of socialization that is not consistent to how our brains are wired. I'll explain what this means. When human beings are socialized, they're supposed to be exposed to a number of stimuli and things that other people do that will trigger reactions in our brains. For example, we're supposed to be socialized by face-to-face communication. Because we learn to read all sorts of things like nonverbal communication, body language, tone of voice, touch, etc. All these things that you don't get with social media or with text messages.
So emoji doesn't do it for me?
Emoji, I'm afraid, will not do it for you, Gary. So that's the type, but that's what I mean when I talk about the real connection that your brain needs versus the indirect communication that is involved in this sort of socialization that we now have with social media, etc. And that really brings a lot of danger when it comes to the way, especially with children and young people, etc., that are still being socialized, the fact that they're missing out on all those other important elements of socialization and social interaction with other humans that I mentioned. The impact of that is actually potentially huge.
So if you go, you know, what is it, emotional quotient? Which these days seems to be vital. Is it only vital because so many people lack it because of this? Or is it suddenly it's vital? I don't know.
It is
asking the question.
It's vital because it really is.
It's more because you know it's a word that you hear people throw in now. Oh, that person, their EQ, they don't quite have the EQ that's needed. Is that because we actually are slowly losing our EQ? So those that actually have a normal EQ are considered above normal or different to normal or.
Well, that's a great question, actually. I think when you talk about EQ, first of all, it's great that people talk about EQ in general, because if you think about IQ, for instance, which, you know, the first IQ test was developed in 1904 by a guy named Alfred Binet, his name was, and then Goddard, the American psychologist, in 1910. Actually made it really popular, etc. But for more than a century, in fact, I would say that IQ was considered the most important predictor of success when it comes to performance at work, etc. The sort of general intelligence and technical skills, even, etc. Those were the key things. And now we're actually living in a world where, you know, there's equal importance, if not more, that is being given to emotions and to emotional intelligence, thanks to, you know, Daniel Goleman, the American psychologist that coined the term emotional intelligence. But what emotional intelligence is, it's essentially the ability to understand and manage your own emotions and the emotions of others. If you think about what this actually means in the context of the hyper-connected society that we live in, but with the social media and these types
you've got my head running off on trails. So does that explains why Well, that explains why we have trolls on social media, and because I do not have to have any emotional connection with
exactly
this sub,
and exactly
where people can say things on a social media platform
yeah.
about people
yeah.
and give no regard to it because they actually don't have to engage with the person that they're
exactly.
saying about or to.
Exactly. So if it, so essentially, if you think about this in that context of social media in particular, it means that you're socializing human beings and conditioning people in a context where they're removed from the real emotional exchanges that are supposed to happen in social connection, in social interaction.
How does that affect my performance as a person? Most of our performance, if we put it this way, is about our influence over the performance of others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we use the term getting the best out of others.
Mm-hmm.
What do people need from me? What do mm-hmm. I need from that? It's like this transaction of I need from you, you need from me, so we can
yep.
achieve. So how does all this affect? How does it affect me and my performance when it comes to my mental well-being?
Mm-hmm. So it's a great question. The first thing that I think we need to understand is the impact of real social connection,
yeah.
the human to human connection, the impact that has not just for me as an individual, but for us as a whole. So to answer your question, if I'm someone who needs to, you know, get the best out of others, and I'm someone who needs to not only work with others, but work through others, it's really...
And I'm going to be able to cope with others.
And cope with others.
Yeah,
exactly.
So that's that whole, that interconnected, this...
Yeah. So it's really understanding what's happening for me in terms of how this exchange impacts me and my mental well-being, but also the whole, the group, whatever that represents for you in your context. First of all, I think when we need to talk about what happens when we feel rejected, for instance, and what happens in these social interactions, both in the virtual reality that we've talked about as well of social media, etc., but also in the real world, what happens when human beings experience social rejection, for example.
So I can let you get going, right? So I'm just, so this whole, my mental well-being, right? And it does link to performance, but so much of it, there is a link between my ability or my inability to have correct social connection or real social connection. That's
absolutely
so
absolutely
vital.
And it's vital. If you really think about this, the brain, that is actually an organ that only takes up 2% of your body weight but spends 20% of your energy, the fact that the brain would spend its kind of default network type of functioning is exactly the same as your social thinking type of functioning. So really this is central to our well-being, that the impact of social connection in people's not only well-being but people's performance and the ability to perform at their best, the impact is huge.
All right, so you talked about rejection, the impact that has on. So there's obviously a big link to anxiety,
yeah.
of anxious about what you feel
yeah.
about me,
yeah.
And all of those sorts of things that breeds all of its own, seems to take on its own little life, linked to my lack of correct social connection. I don't know if you feel the right things about me, so now I'm fearing that you reject me. I've got
yeah.
all of this going on. So real social connection. So it's not just getting, from what I understand, listening to us talk, it's not just getting disconnected with all the sorts of indirect forms of communication.
Yeah.
It's ensuring that I've got the right side the right type of social connection.
Yes.
Coming back to the balance of these two sides,
yes,
parasympathetic and the sympathetic. I have to get myself into the parasympathetic to break my, to give mm-hmm. myself what
mm-hmm.
I need.
Mm-hmm.
So real social connection mm. is what's going to bring me to this parasympathetic where I'm getting a break from the stresses. Because you know, most of what we do with performance is for is people related.
Yeah.
Right. So I've got to get out of the stress of that by making sure I've got the right real social connection.
Exactly.
Does that help me handle the stress of this?
It actually does. It actually does, Gary. First of all, what is the real social connection? What is it that we're talking about? We're talking about a couple of things. First of all, there's relationships. Not just interactions, social interactions with others that
yeah.
are important, definitely, and our brain naturally craves that, but it's more than that. So the being plugged into healthy relationships that actually help to regulate our brain functioning and all sorts of cognitive processes that need to happen for us to have a healthy mind. All of those things happen when you're plugged into healthy relationships. So we talk about that, relationships, whether that's family, friends, marriage, whatever, romantic relationships, etc., etc. But also other types of social interaction. So yes, relationships. One of them. The other one is what we call groups. So the sense of belonging to a group does a lot to someone's sort of sense of identity. Even the notion of social identity is very closely linked to. And if we think about social identity theory, for instance, when we're going into social psychology a little bit now. But social identity theory is actually all about that. It's about how people gain a sense of identity from the groups that they belong to. And how actually that really is important for people as well in terms of their healthy functioning. So it's relationships, it's the sense
of belonging
to a group.
Well, that's why it's interesting. We'll leave one community
yeah.
to join another community because we might have social exclusion or isolation in that community,
exactly.
But I find inclusion
exactly
in and
yeah.
acceptance in this collusion, this community, and take yeah. on the identity of that community.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes, okay. And not just because you find yes, inclusion and psychological safety that restores that sense of belonging, and therefore the relationship links come in as well in your brain circuitry. But it's more than that. It's also how the identity of a particular group seems to be very important for human beings when it comes to defining their own identity. And you can see this in all sorts of areas, from sports clubs to political parties
yeah.
to people kind of define themselves and who they are according to different groups, right?
Okay. Yeah.
But in addition to this, you then have something else, which is not necessarily relationships, it's not necessarily a group that you belong to, but it's social interactions that involve generosity, which is very interesting. And there's been some fascinating research in recent years on what happens in your brain when you choose to do acts of generosity. And actually, we need to talk about the neurochemicals, neurotransmitters, the different happy hormones, if you like, the neurochemical release
yeah.
that happens in the brain when you experience different stimuli. And everyone knows or has heard of oxytocin, for instance, which is considered the love hormone, if you like, or the connection hormone. You experience a release of oxytocin when you touch someone that you love, or when you mothers experience a release of oxytocin when they breastfeed their
babies. Or when
babies.
You just do something selfless towards someone as well.
Well,
yeah.
that's the thing.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that you also experience a release of oxytocin when you do something selfless to others, but not just oxytocin. This recent research that I'm referring to, which is from Stanford University, they found that acts of generosity not only activate a release of oxytocin, but they also stimulate another hormone, which is serotonin, which is called the sort of pleasure. Exactly, it's the pleasure hormone. Serotonin is linked to the kind of reward circuitry in your brain. It's not only, I guess what this shows us is that being generous to other humans not only makes you feel great and it gives you a release of happy hormones in your brain and it makes you feel sort of connected, but because you experience that connectedness with another human being that is completely selfless, that actually gives you a huge surge of pleasure. And it's linked to the reward circuitry of the brain, which means that it's potentially addictive. So being generous is not only making you feel good, but it's potentially addictive as well. And the research from these guys found that if we're talking about isolated acts of generosity, the impact isn't as strong in your brain. But actually your brain not only enjoys that, but it craves for more of that. So it's regular acts of selfless generosity that actually does it.
All right, I'm fascinated because I always filter this through little discoveries. So I've got this little habit. I don't necessarily talk about what it is, but and I've noticed that if I do it and somebody sees me do it, it's like, oh yeah, that's cool. But then when I do it and someone doesn't, I just walk away with this buzz.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's to the point where it's like I purposely, you know, go, okay, I need to make sure I've got this on me today so that when I, and I found myself looking for, to be able to do this, which is in regard to helping someone.
Yeah.
Without anybody noticing me doing it. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. And that is, it's like a, it's literally like lights flashing in your brain when that happens. And when you do that, and really that's also why sometimes you hear people say, you know, you can feel down, but you sit down with a friend who might be going through something worse than you are,
yeah,
and you walk away feeling a little bit better about yourself. Sometimes people say that,
and they think,
"Oh, I'm really horrible because I've just, you know, spoken to someone who's a lot worse than I am, and that makes me feel better." Well, it's for all sorts of reasons, but it's also the fact that you are doing that and you choose to sit down and selflessly give energy and time into helping someone else without any benefit to you whatsoever. That actually benefits you, even when you think it doesn't. It does. It's of huge benefit to your emotional and mental well-being.
Right. Okay. So we're hyper-connected. We've got this. So we've got to work out how to disconnect. We've got to work out how to connect.
Yeah.
And so, give me some. Give me some solution. I'm sitting here, and if I was to ask you, okay, so I just can't switch off.
Mm.
And then it's because I'm connected,
mm-hmm,
and I'm not connected.
Exactly.
So help me with the things I should disconnect with,
yeah,
and help me with the things I should connect with.
So the first thing that I would say is just switch off. Switch off your phone, switch off the technology, or give yourself a specific time during the day where you will be switched on, where you can check your phone, emails, etc. But it's making sure that you're not doing that, especially at night.
So essentially what you need to do is really just understand the value of switching off from the gadgets or assigning a specific amount of time to those things so that you can really switch off.
Well, little things like, okay, so when you switch off the gadget, so I'm just, you know, you give a few practical tools for people. So I've noticed, now these are just observations within myself. So, there's a side of me, I care about the world we live in, right? So I assume everyone does, but not everyone does, I guess, I don't know. I'm just talking about me. So I really care about what's going on. I care about politics. I care about all those things. But I've noticed that if I don't watch the news, I'm much happier. because I get a bit addicted to
yeah.
what's this news people, what do they say, what do they say, what do they say, what do they say, what do they say? And I've discovered I have a much happier day when I don't start the day with the news.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. For example, and yes, that absolutely, because again...
Not saying don't watch the news, but I'm talking about it, how the, connected to things that we've got to get work out how not to make sure...
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. And to do those things, and essentially it's not rocket science really. What I'm saying is just to do things in moderation, really. Instead of being, because it's very easy to become very addicted to that type of connection.
So which is what?
Which is the social media, which is the, you know, the immediate, the the phone, the text.
Are they going to like it? Why didn't someone didn't like it? Did they reject me?
Exactly.
Why didn't they? They normally like all my photos, but they didn't like this one. What do they think?
Exactly. It's very easy to become conditioned to only interact that way or to take that very seriously. So it's really, again, this is basic, just use it in moderation. That's what it is. And I think the other thing is, so as you learn how to intentionally switch off from those things, you need to then switch on to the real type of connection which we talked about earlier. So it's making sure that you're placing value on the relationships that you have, the groups that you belong to, and the social interactions with other human beings along the way that are not necessarily part of your group and not necessarily in your relationships, but are other humans that, because they are part of the same, you know, species, interaction with other humans is incredibly important for our mental well-being as well. And that's where the things that we discussed earlier, such as acts of generosity, such as you know, being with other people that are not necessarily groups or relationships, but just being with others and having real connection with other people is equally as important as that. And that falls under the real sort of social connection piece that we need to be more switched on. As we do this, it's also important to think about the other elements that we discussed earlier around emotional intelligence and what this generates for us. Again, the ability to read our internal emotional states, but also other people's emotional states, and how that activates all the right circuitry in our brain to ensure that we are healthy is hugely important. And acknowledging, and again, you know, acknowledging your own emotions and other people's emotions. You can only do this if you have face-to-face interaction with people.
Okay, because I read something just recently, and I can't remember who it was or what I was reading, whether it was a paper or a book, that used the term that said that empathy and compassion were two contributors to our morality, the shaping our morality. Yeah. Our morality is... You know, in the context of, is actually more to do with how we interact with other people, whether we use them, whether we abuse them, somehow we've taken our morality and made it all about me, but it's actually it's an expression of self towards others, right? So this whole ability to empathize and have compassion on people, well, how do I get compassion? How do I build empathy? I've got to engage other people, haven't I?
You have to engage others. And actually you have, every normally functioning human being has those, that cognitive mechanism already inbuilt. What you need is engaging with others to activate it.
It's to express it.
Exactly.
Or activate it. Express it activates it. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Yeah. Expressing it, and not just expressing, but experiencing it, because you can experience through social interaction without necessarily expressing yet, but even experiencing it and then expressing it, those are the things that will activate that cognitive mechanism. So it's all there, but really the more you separate, you detach yourself from these types of interactions and this type of social connection, the more difficult it will be to feel empathy and to feel compassion.
So if I'm someone who, you know, just say I've got a busy life, just say I've got a big life, all of those things, which doesn't necessarily mean I have to be at what we might say the top of the corporate food chain or whatever. And I'm starting to experience social anxiety, perhaps. Is that a term?
Yeah,
is that
it
a reality?
Is. Yeah.
And I realize that my performance is waning because of my anxiety towards interacting with other people. Everything from sitting in a meeting with people. They're all real outworkings.
They are very real.
So the challenge is because if I've got myself into a position where, let's go, my hyper-connected world, which can include people and the things, but let's go the indirect communication where it's not me and you, it's me via a machine, so to speak. And I found myself, I'm in this place where it's like, all right, I'm still using all of this, but I'm absent of this. I'm absent of this real social connection.
Mm.
How do I cross that line? I'm stuck here.
Yeah. When you say that you don't have that world and the real connections, are we talking about people that just are isolated or feel isolated?
I guess there's a whole lot of what I'm...
Because there's all sorts of...
There could be a whole lot of what I mean, but I think if we're not careful, we can be so connected here that we... And we're not connected here, that we are now suddenly aware of all of the, let's call it the downfalls of being all of this. So I could have anything from extreme social anxiety to experience it mildly. I can't read people anymore. I can't interact. I'm there and I want to get into balance. What should I do?
So first of all, and you're right, by the way, because people unlearn those things and those skills because they've been overexposed to a different types of socialization, basically. But you can learn everything because, again, it's all there. It just needs to be activated or reactivated. So the first thing...
If I seize on that, because I think sometimes we go... When I say we, I'm talking like I could reflect and think of my own. I get that, or people I know, or what, just by nature of what I do, and can almost like go, yeah, but how? Mm. It's almost like this is fait accompli. This is how it is now.
Yeah.
Where you just use the term I can learn because I learnt how to get here, didn't I?
Yeah.
And my brain, all I have to do is. Re-educate.
Yeah.
I've got to relearn to go back and get a balance in this.
Absolutely.
So
it has a name.
Yeah.
It's called socialization.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's really going through that process again. That's what it is. Different things can help you accelerate that process.
Because the reason why I'm at this, I'm trying to get you to get real practical. Stuck here. My answer to the way I feel because of this is I'm going to withdraw from everything.
Yes.
Which actually you're saying that withdrawing from everything's not. It's withdrawing from this and re-engaging with this.
Yeah.
All right.
And again, because also even when people think that they're withdrawing, I can't say the word now, from everything, they're not. Because again, even when your brain is resting, the default network of your brain is identical to the social part of your brain. So really, even when you're doing that, you're still somehow a social being and you're still thinking about other people. And that's why it's so vital that you actually experience some real social connection. Because otherwise, if it all stays there, but you're
detached.
So
almost like I've got to make myself go here, regardless of how I think it's going to make me feel.
Exactly. That's it. That's it. Absolutely. And some things will help you do that.
Yep.
Some things will, and really the the generosity thing is a quick win. It's actually a quick win because it will make you feel really good. Doing something selfless for someone else will help you connect that part of your brain because it's it makes you feel great, and therefore it will help you to attach to that part of your brain again. The other thing that helps also, interestingly enough, is to engage in your emotional world, if you like. Because again, that's so linked to socialization and to the way we experience reality with other human beings. So really engaging with your emotions, and again, being very aware of what they are, allowing yourself to feel the way you feel, etc., etc. That whole side of things will also help you reconnect to that world and to others. And really, you have to. But the bottom line is, you have to be intentional about it. You have to do it, even if you feel like you don't want to do it. You have to.
Yeah. So regardless of how you feel, you need to do these things.
Exactly.
A little bit like get the balance.
Exactly.
The balance of on, break, on, break. Mm. You regardless of how it feels, the discipline is I have to do it to start re-establishing mental health.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. You're awesome.